Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Tom, worst in-game injury you've ever suffered?
I raced down Okemo Mountain. My buddy Charlie raced down a skiing slope and broke my arm, my humerus bone up at the top. They thought that I dislocated it, and so they put it in a really terrible sling. Worst pain that I've had in an athletic competition, and it was just terrible.
Memorial Day weekend in quarantine, I'm doing one of my favorite chicken dishes, which requires searing the skin and then putting the entire skillet into the oven in 450 degrees and then taking it out and finishing it again on the stovetop. Except when you take out a 450 degree pan from a 450 degree oven, if you use your bare hand, Tom.
Oh no.
Not fun. Because what happens is you then spend Saturday night of Memorial Day weekend on your couch holding an ice bag for 12 straight hours, rummaging and finding a few painkillers in the house. And then you can't actually sleep because you have to continue to hold the ice until morning. And so you watch like 7 episodes back to back of Mad Men.
That's what the money is for!
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Ornovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
Tom, this might be one of my all-time favorite episodes, the Tournament of Tofu. We got brackets, we got double elimination, we got the Last Chance Kitchen finale. We have so much to talk about. We don't have much time to do it in. I thought this was an episode for the ages.
Totally disagree. I thought it was way too much. Too much going on. Maybe I'm coupling this with Last Chance Kitchen because we are going to talk about not just the previous episode's Last Chance Kitchen, but because we watched this on Thursday night, we were able to do the double Last Chance Kitchen and watch that. It was just overload for me. There was no winner in this episode. The loser's bracket was confusing. I thought it was just too much going on, and we'll get into it, but I thought the scoring system was off. Kevin, I just thought they kind of got drunk on their own Top Chef-iness. Like, I thought there was just too much.
I'm shocked to hear you say this. You're a man who loves brackets.
I know.
I thought there was game strategy here. Now, let's set aside Last Chance Kitchen, which is, as you know, we think is a beautiful product. I agree. A lot going on in Last Chance Kitchen they had to do. But just starting with the sort of the Chipotle Bowl and then going into the Tournament of Tofu, you know, I often have apprehensions about these sort of heads up Top Chef elimination challenges where it's sort of arbitrary. You're going against just the chef you went against so that you have two really good competitors. One of them has to lose even though they have the better dish than the person who won the next pairing. But I thought this made a lot of sense with the different kinds of tofu. The setting was gorgeous. I got to tell you, man, I really loved all the machinations. Let's set aside Last Chance Kitchen. I mean, let's start with Quickfire. We got the Chipotle tourney. Now, I'm not a Chipotle man myself because cilantro is hell. We have three pairings. They have to go.
Wait, you're not a fan of Chipotle, the eatery.
Yeah, I like Chipotle, the pepper I'm okay with because it's kind of smoky and nice.
Right, right. Okay.
I have a degree of appreciation for Chipotle, the concept, fast casual thing. I just am not. Like, every time I've gone there and not wanted cilantro, I still get cilantro and I kind of just gave it up. Also, I live in Los Angeles. What do I need it for?
It sneaks in there, doesn't it?
So the judges give off some criteria. They want Shota versus Maria. Tart and spicy is the parameter.
Mm-hmm.
They go Dawn versus Byron, tangy, crunchy. Jamie versus Gabe, smoky and charred. So each of these pairs of chefs has to kind of conform to the, you know, very general taste profile. And then they get going.
Of those three, which one would you want to eat?
Oh, I'm a smoky and charred guy.
Totally with you on this.
I love smoky Mexican food, like those smoky black bean dips. I like smoke in my Mexican food.
I like smoke in everything. I don't smoke cig. I never smoke cigarettes, but like I'm a campfire guy. Like, you know, those new outdoor bonfire pits, those fire pits that are smokeless fire pits?
Yes.
I hate it. I'm like, I kind of like the little smell of the campfire smoke on me.
I mean, I was going to get one of those in this landscaping project would do, but I live on a hillside in Los Angeles. Like, I would be the guy who burns down the whole metropolitan area. I do feel you. I would love one of those in my backyard, so provided I didn't have to be the one supervising it.
Right. When Gail said it, I was like, that is the flavor profile I want. Mm-hmm. And in these matchups, Kevin, with Shota and Maria, I thought that Shota, that was the biggest upset, was like Maria with the Chipotle setup. I just thought that this was going to be her running away with this. And Shota, almost like taste of her own medicine, just beats her in this.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because this is the first of two Shota versus Maria matchups. The first is very much on her home turf. The second, what we'll find out later in the elimination challenge, is on his home turf. And it didn't seem like home court really provided much of an advantage.
No, no. I'm not sure where I fall on the fried avocado thing. I don't know if the textures work there. Do you have an opinion on fried avocado?
Frying is fun because it provides richness. I mean, what's better than fried food? To me, avocado isn't something that needs to be fried. It's sort of like pork belly. Like, it's so naturally fatty in the best kind of way that the frying of it just doesn't enhance the fattiness and the richness. It only kind of obscures its sort of natural fatness. I don't get frying avocado. There are a lot of, like, in the tempura event where let's fry everything. There are things that I just don't think benefit from being fried, and avocado, because it's so rich, is one of them.
Yeah, Shota comes in with the upset there, and then Dawn and Byron feeding Tom there. They had the tangy and crunchy and the mojo pork that Byron put together. And then Dawn did the seared chop with peppercorns and the puree. Man, both of those looked really good. And I'm not surprised that Dawn came out with the victory there.
So apparently she nailed the protein in a way he didn't, and she got the crunch in a way he didn't. Again, further evidence. And Dawn wins this quickfire with this dish. Again, she has not cooked a bad dish in season 18. Has not cooked a bad dish. Quickfire, elimination, team, individual, has not cooked a bad dish, Tom.
No, and you know, she hadn't won a quickfire yet, and she comes in with the victory here. I was sitting there just being like, they just did a little segment about her brother and the Olympian. I'm feeling a little weird about Dawn in the entry of this episode, but there was a lot of Dawn to get into here. And she comes out with the first quickfire victory. She's no Brian Voltaggio here. She might be an excellent top chef, but she doesn't have a blind spot for quickfire. She gets over the hump. She nails the quickfire win. So congrats to Dawn on that.
Yeah. Cooking her ass off. It's been this way for many weeks. And there is a real Gregory quality to her food, the way she builds a dish. She starts with a primary component, a protein, and then she sort of adds elements of spice, tart, texture. There's nothing complicated about her dishes. This is not molecular gastronomy with bells and whistles and gimmicks.
Right.
But it is creative. She is very similar to Gregory in the way she builds a dish. It's just becoming more and more impressive by the week. The final tandem were Jamie and Gabe. That was your Smokey and Chard. That was the cooking for Gale division. Jamie comes with the grilled skirt steak with a smoked corn tortilla salsa. Gabe does his roasted pork loin with a smoked jalapeno salsa. Very similar dishes. Gabe does come on top there, does he not?
Yeah, he does. And I'm curious, isn't bay leaf something you're not supposed to eat? So he does a bay leaf puree. Can you walk me through that, Kevin?
Yeah, bay leaf is something you kind of, it's often a recipe will call for it for balance. Like it's often in a brine. It just kind of, I think kind of rounds off some of the rough edges and a solution like that. So I don't understand. Like, I guess you can make oil out of anything.
Yeah.
And that might have been sort of the thing. That's a really good question.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Because I've never known it to be anything other than sort of, hey, this thing I put in a brine or to kind of mellow a gumbo. Like, that's always where I see it. So I have no earthly idea of what it provided in that particular thing. And so actually, readers, viewers, listeners, please let us know if you know in what capacity Gabe was using his bay leaf magic.
Would you consider this a foreshadowing of the finale when you have Shota, Don, and Gabe winning this quickfire?
See, that's what I thought, because I think those were the morning line favorites, right? Like if I told you in the Chipotle tourney or the Chipotle bowl, here are the three pairings. I think if you're just going with the morning line favorites, we're talking Shota, Don, and Gabe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think it's close. As it would turn out, it wasn't exactly how it played out in the wonderful tournament of tofu. Again, I know we have some differences here. I love medium, extra firm, and firm were sort of the three divisions. So what I like about it is often, again, I have an issue with this head-to-head. Like, it's just arbitrary. If they're all doing the same thing, they weren't doing the same thing. They had different products to work with. Then you get kind of the winners move on. The one question I had, Tom, is were you surprised when all this turned over, they didn't name the best overall dish? So the three winners, they didn't say of the three winners, this is, you know, Jamie had the best dish for her bunso or something.
This is another problem I had with the episode is that there wasn't a winner. I know the elimination challenge isn't the winner's challenge. Like we do it to eliminate someone, but I can't remember a time where they just straight up didn't give us a winner. And it wasn't because the dishes were bad. It was just because they ran out of time, I guess.
I probably ran out of time. But that was the one thing that confounded me on this is the one criticism I had is it probably would have been Jamie. There were three matchups. Two of them were split down the middle, 5 and 5. Jamie won hers 9-1. By the way, I found that very interesting. And we'll get to that, actually. Let's go through the pairings again.
Yeah.
This time, it's a turn of tables, right? Because Shota's against Maria. However, this time, it's tofu played in a Japanese garden. So this is the ultimate home court for Chef Shota. His food he's worked with a million times. And Maria doesn't have a lot of experience with sort of classical Japanese. And yet, her soy braised tamale, she's using masa. She even brings masa into the tamale. She is going to go as Mexican as she can get, still incorporating the overall challenge, the soy. Shota does his like soy 17 ways, this beautiful soy braised tofu. He's got the soy milk tofu skin, the yuba. He's got tofu crumbles. And yet, when it is all over, the 10 judges, which included a bunch of our Top Chef alums, we got Ed Lee in there, we got Richard Blaze's back, Kwame, and they go 5-5.
Hate this.
5-5.
I hate this because if you're going to do a voting system, you have to come out with odds. You have to have 9 or 7 judges because then we're going to get this tie and then they huddle up and it's awkward. And maybe this is why, Kevin. Maybe this is why they didn't have an eventual winner because they're too busy doing these sidebars.
You are just
breaking the tie.
You are Debbie Downer today.
You're enjoying your day. Everything's going your way. Then along comes Debbie Downer. Always there to tell you about a new disease, a car accident, or killer bees. The beggar to spare you, Debbie, please. But you can't stop Debbie Downer.
You hated this episode, Tom Haverstraw.
I did. I thought it was half big.
You hated this episode.
We're going to have every chef have a vote, but we're not going to have a deciding vote. Like, you have to come up with odds, not even number of chefs, and so that you don't have this sidebar. And like, I get it. You want to include as many Top Chef alums as you can, but I just felt like this was, oh shit, 5-5. What do we do now?
See, I liked the 12 Angry Men quality to the deliberation. I kind of like them going to different sides of the room and then kind of making their case. Like I kind of, maybe I'm just like, it was all very, I don't know, it was all very Jewish. It was this very Talmudic, like these people arguing about about finer details of the compositions of each dish. I loved this.
Wouldn't it be cool, Kevin, if you could see who turned? Like who went on the other side of the aisle? Like that would have been cool. It's like, you know, Richard Blaze says, like, you know what? You're right. I didn't consider that. And I'm gonna go Team Jamie here.
Well, see, this is my interpretation of the first division, which was over Shota versus Maria. At the end of the day, you know, Tom was just adamant. Like you could just tell. Like at the end of the day, he and Patton are probably the most important two of the 10 judges. And he was like, the masa was mush. Like, this is a tofu challenge. Get real, people. We're going to take Shota over Maria. Come on. And then the second one I interpreted as, we'll go the 5-on-5 that was Dawn versus Gabe was.
It was Jamie and Byron, I think, were 5-on-5.
No. I believe it was Byron Jamie was 9-1.
In fact,
to that in a second. Oh, no, that was the fried tofu. Right.
See, this is why this episode, there's so much.
Okay, I'm a little confused here. Okay, you're right.
I think Jamie and Byron had a tie because it was the second, that was the second one on the show, right? They did Shota and Maria.
No, then it was Dawn and Gabe who had the tie.
Oh, wait.
Right, because
okay.
It was West Indian stew tofu versus Gabe's marinated braised tofu. And Dale said he didn't braise it. He just dropped it in the liquid. So that was the big deliberation there.
You're right.
But the point I'm making is my interpretation of that 5-on-5 was that Gail, Padma, and Tom were all on the same side, which is Gabe's side. Mm. And there was no way that the side, the 5-on-5 side that included the two primary hosts and the supporting host were ever going to lose to a bunch of Top Chef returnees, some of which had never even won the tournament. Come on.
You're saying there's little weighted votes. It's a 1.5 on a vote.
On a more serious note, the one thing that it did impress upon me is that it was an interesting window into how close some of these votes are. Like, it was kind of the conversation we had with Blaze earlier in the season. It was the winning dish and he just did not get it.
Yeah, there was a dish that it seemed like everyone loved, but Blaze wasn't feeling it.
I found this to be a very interesting episode in that it makes me wonder just a lot of these calls they make are not that decisive. There are often real differences in opinion. I mean, there were 10 really talented chefs up there and 5 of them came out in a completely different place than the other 5. For Tom, it was clearly unthinkable that Maria's dish approached the elegance and coherence of Shota's. And yet for half of them, that wasn't the case at all. And it was a really interesting window in just to how divisive some of this stuff is. We take it almost as an article of faith that the vote is the vote, that it was decisive, that a win is a win. And it's clear that it just doesn't work that way.
You know, I hadn't considered that, but that's a great point. And so, you know what? There is a silver lining to this episode, Kevin.
There's a lot less consensus than I think we believe there is in Top Chef. And the consensus formation process is really complicated. So that second 5-on-5 was Dawn's West Indian stewed tofu. Gabe had his marinated braised tofu with his lovely rich miso with cabbages and soybeans. He wins the split decision. We get to Extra Firm and Jamie makes what seems to be the best dish of the day. She makes bun so, which are these little Vietnamese pancakes. They're these cute little things. They're great. I mean, and she makes this pancake with soy milk, not just water as normal. She does sauteed tofu and these fresh herbs. It looked like the cutest little jewel of a dish. I think Dale said that he could have eaten 12 of them.
Yeah.
Up against Byron's pan-seared tofu with daikon and a tofu vinaigrette, which seemed perfectly competent, but a dish I had no interest in eating or tasting. So Jamie wins decisively, the only of the 6 chefs that wins decisively in the round 1. So Maria loses, Dawn loses, Byron loses. They get thrown into the loser's bracket. They do a cook-off, all 3 of them, for fried tofu.
Real quick on Jamie, it really showed that she loves tofu. She talked about it. She felt like she was like Forrest Gump, which I think she meant Bubba from Forrest Gump.
Anyway, like I was saying, shrimp is the fruit of the sea. You can barbecue it, boil it, broil it, bake it, saute it. There's shrimp kebabs, shrimp creole, shrimp gumbo, pan fried, deep fried, stir fried. There's pineapple shrimp, lemon shrimp, coconut shrimp, pepper shrimp, shrimp soup, shrimp stew, shrimp salad, shrimp and potatoes, shrimp burger, shrimp sandwich. That's about it.
Jamie just looked like she was in her element. And I thought, you're right. is that she, if they did decide a winner, it seemed like she was going to win that competition. So I actually kept her at 5 points, Kevin, rather than the 10. And I actually, I went and consulted the Wikipedia and they agreed that there wasn't a clear winner in this episode. And so I gave points to Shota, Jamie, and Gabe in this one. And then we go into the loser's bracket with Maria, Dawn, and Byron. And we have the biggest injury DQ that I can remember in this season. It was, wow, it was a big deal.
Yeah, Tom, it was really stressful to watch. A, I feel very vested in Dawn right now. She's on my team. But also, I really just like, she's one of my favorite chef contestants of recent years. I love her food. She's unpredictable, right? Like, there's always this tension in watching her, even though you know she hasn't cooked a bad plate all season, where like she doesn't know exactly what she's doing. She's kind of winging it. So like, it's not the sort of control where, you know, when you'd watch Gregory, and this is where she's very different than Gregory or Voltaggio or anybody else, you always know they are working methodically. Like, they know exactly what they're doing. And with Dawn, part of just, it's not just that she's cooking great food, is that there's always this little doubt in your head, like, is she going to get it on the plate? Does she know what she's doing? Do her teammates know what she's doing? Nobody really knows what she's doing except her. And then it just produces this beautiful outcome. But here, you know, she's doing a Nashville hot tofu, which, Tom, how brilliant is Nashville hot tofu?
I love the idea. And it was like, oh, I'm not a huge tofu fan. Like, it's not like when they offer it or something like that, I'm like, this doesn't feel like a real meal here. I'm not as a seasoned veteran of tofu food. So I actually really appreciated the episode, the historical, you know, kind of behind the scenes at Oda Tofu, the oldest tofu maker in America, that's in Portland. And so when she said the hot tofu Nashville style, that was the first one where I was like, oh yeah, I would totally eat the crap out of that. And then when she goes, and it just seemed a little bland in color, so I wanted to go with radishes. Kevin, as soon as she said that, I was like, I wonder what, that seems like a very specific detail that they normally don't put on the show that makes the final cut. There's got to be something to this. And then boom, the injury happens. And
mandolins.
I cringe, man. Those mandolin things, I cringe every time. These chefs, even though they're pros.
Look, I use one occasionally. They're scary, those mandolin things. And they're rich of it. I mean, I'm with you on tofu in the sense that I don't seek it out. I do love it at like a classical Japanese place. Like, have you gone during Summer League in Vegas? Did you ever go to Raku? Did we ever do that together?
No.
That Japanese place in that little shopping center on Spring Mountain. Like, they do their classical and I think to a lot of people it would just be bland, but there's just this beautiful, delicate texture. It's just so silky. And I love it there, but I don't order a lot. But that Nashville hot tofu, I felt terrible because, you know, she slices her finger, blood gets in the radishes, and then apparently some of the blood drips into a couple of the plates, meaning she can't serve all 10 judges. And by virtue of not getting 10 plates out, she is DQ'd, even though was it Ed who actually said, hey, in protest, can I vote for her? I'm not buying this rule, because he got one of the 8 plates. And Ed Lee, you know, but Padma was very firm.
Yeah,
she was not going to be included. Maria's fried tofu steak with the Asian mole looked delicious. It was clear she had the best dish among her and Byron, who did fried tofu with grilled shrimp and a smoked tofu puree. Now, what was interesting here is the vote was 9-1. And who was the lone vote? I cannot wait if we get a chance to ask her this. Gail Simmons was the lone vote for Byron. She is the John Marshall Harlan of Top Chef. Do you know who John Marshall Harlan was, Tom?
I don't, but please educate me.
Great Supreme Court Justice John Marshall Harlan, who, by the way, dissenting vote in Plessy versus Ferguson, like, had real issues with some of the really awful segregationist law that was being pumped out of this country in the late 19th century. And he was known as the great dissenter. He was like the one in all, the one dissenter in more cases, I think, than anybody else. But he was known as the great dissenter. So Gail Simmons, you were the John Marshall Harlan of Top Chef.
I'm sure she'll appreciate that when you ask her about that. I was like sitting there being like, who was that dissenter there?
Oh, I froze the screen, Tom, and there's Gail defiantly. Like, she felt like Byron had the better dish that her his fried tofu was better than Maria's. No one else agreed with her, and she was going to go. And I love that. That is the John Marshall Harlan way to go there.
So then there's like a little Russian doll here thing effect where like now we go on to the next one, which is the dessert portion with Maria and it goes Byron. And then Dawn go into the next competition for dessert with soft tofu.
This is the elimination round. There is nowhere else to drop into. And they both are doing, and I think it comes as no surprise. I mean, there are only so many ways to kind of do a tofu dessert. I mean, you know, I guess you could have done like a little tiramisu or something, but they both opt for a tofu custard with mango and Okara crumble. Okara was that kind of very mealy stuff that you saw when they went to the thing and they kind of made that into a crumble. And they both did a very similar dish. Byron's was definitely a more elegant composition. Dawn did this kind of aerated tofu on top, which gave it some intrigue. We didn't get to see the vote here. What was interesting is I was very fearful for Dawn because, I mean, you could see on the sidelines the chefs who had already survived sort of saying, is she thrown in the towel? She kind of looks like, you know, she sort of given up, I think it was in the words of somebody. I forget who it was. But this was a very stressful moment.
Yeah, I mean, she had like that sesame cookie. She really, I think when you all said and done, the fact that she overcame this injury, I don't know if that kind of gave her a little bit of sentimental, just goodwill vote here, where it was just like, man, if this is a tie, maybe that's a tiebreaker. I actually think when they were both crying up there, it reminded me of the camaraderie that we've seen. We've seen little pockets of it here, Kevin, how much camaraderie they do have with these chefs. It's not quite the all-star season where they're living in the same house. It might be a little bit different this year, but when you saw them rally for Dawn when she cut herself, Padma called it like a beautiful moment. And I agree. It was cool to see that they all pitched in knowing that like Dawn, you know, like this is probably an injury they've suffered hundreds of times in their chef career. And it sucks. And, you know, there was a moment where I was like, wow, we've seen Maria cry on every episode, but now we have Dawn and Byron kind of weeping, talking about how proud they are of being this far in the competition. And they're not even in the finale yet. And they know that there's huge stakes here. And when Padma says, you know, Byron, pack your knives and go, I was kind of surprised. I thought Dawn, it was a dead heat, I felt like. And again, I'm curious to see what that breakdown looked like. Very similar dishes. But yeah, Dawn stays, and Maria, of course, later starts crying when Byron has to go. They are very close. And, you know, Kevin, like, I guess my big beef with this episode is there was just, it just felt like not rushed, but there was a lot going on and it didn't feel complete to me. It felt like they had this tournament idea and they rammed it down our throats and it just felt like, oh, we ran out of time here.
I disagree. I just thought there was so much. There was constant drama, just constant drama. I will say that I've never been more frustrated with the show's one limitation, which we've talked about over the years, which is you can't taste the food, right? This was a classic situation where, you know, you're looking at those two dishes. They are very similar, those two desserts. And, you know, I'm rooting for Dawn, not because I know hers is better, because I have absolutely no idea. Because sentimentally, as you say, that was my compulsion. And I just am really into her story right now, but you didn't know, like there's no way to know, but ultimately, she survives. Byron doesn't. He goes home, or rather to Last Chance Kitchen for the final push. We don't have a winner again. That is, I agree with you on that. Like it's bizarre to me that they didn't name either Gabe, Shota or Jamie, the winner for the episode, probably Jamie. But Byron is down in LCK facing Sarah in the last installment or convention, like kind of normal LCK before you get that crazy thing they always do right before you jump back in. But the last is a bento box.
Let's back up for a second, no pun intended, because I don't think we covered the Chris and Sarah Last Chance Kitchen, the head-to-head that they had a couple episodes ago. I just want to hit on this. I don't know why I feel like such a hater here, but I didn't like the BMW, the little like 10 laps race that Tom had to do, but and it was undetermined how much time they had to cook their dishes. I, you know, they got to bring in some synergy with their sponsor. I get that. But it just seemed a little gimmicky and a little corny. The whole, they're 10 laps. Who knows how long you have to cook? And then here he's going to come in and walk in and there's this like dramatic walk and we don't have to spend much time on that one, but it was, you know, I really think that Sarah, it's so funny to watch her cook because it seems like she just doesn't know what she wants to do. And then at the end, you're like, oh my God, what an amazing dish. And she does that turnip, Kevin, which you said, I've never had a good turnip dish. And here she goes with this veggie forward turnip miso with all sorts of really cool pickled beef braised turnips in there. It was, I didn't think Chris had a chance against Sarah in this battle here because Sarah's just so good and she comes out with the victory and the head to head with Chris with the agua chile and halibut, which seemed like pretty fine dish, but Sarah moves on to get into this finale at Last Chance Kitchen.
You know, for all of her giggly self-deprecation, she was kind of mean.
Whoa.
I mean, you saw him like after she won, like it was really good beating Chris. He should have gone home instead of me, you know, in the preview. like for all of her sweet aw shucksiness, and I've been a huge Sarah fan and continue to be, like that was a little, you know, like, that kind of came as a surprise to me.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. I guess you're right. I didn't pick up on that, but yeah. I mean, They're both on your team, aren't they? Like they gotta,
yes.
They can't be so mean to each other.
Gotta disarm me a little bit. So what happens next, Tom? We get back to the finale. It is Sarah versus Byron, a great matchup in a form that I love, which is the bento box. They're so cute, Tom. There's nothing cuter than a bento box. You open that lid and it is a little jewel box. You get a little fish. You got a little like soba noodle over here. You got a little pickles over there. You got like, what is better than a bento box?
Speaking of cute, Kevin, both my daughters have bento boxes that like are really big with the kids these days. It's just like these plastic, you know, hardware where you bring them to school. Instead of a lunchbox, you give your kids bento boxes. And so that's really big these days. Bentgoes, I think it's what it's called. And so every day, Allison makes bento boxes for the girls. And it's just like a peanut butter sandwich in one thing and then some goldfish in the other and some great sliced grapes over here.
I should have been a kid today. I would have had bento boxes. I never would have gotten disciplined for anything. And all of my flaws would have been considered assets. how great is it to grow up today in this generation? You just basically every one of your, you know, your impulses gets indulged at every moment, including bento box love.
Yep. So the bento box is fantastic. Naomi here in Miami.
Oh, the best. The best.
Kevin, we've done that meal together, I believe, and it's so good.
One day that shall happen again. Naoe is the spelling, folks. It is honestly, I think one of my 5 or 10 favorite restaurants in America. It is just such a great experience. But anyway.
I didn't have a ton of notes on this one, but just the fact that Byron going against Sarah, I thought he was the heavy underdog going into this matchup. What'd you think?
Yeah, so did I. And I think the secret is Sarah, you know, bento box, there's a certain cleanliness I think you want to a bento. It needs to be really focused. I mean, Japanese cooking in general, you don't color outside the lines very much. And I thought he just kept it really smart. A tataki salmon, right? Like, you know, she did a couple of really interesting things, quail egg with uni cream, but ultimately it was her green tea rice, which just didn't have, you know, he did, and it just didn't, it tasted watery. It didn't have any flavor. Yeah. She went a little bit, I think her creativity may have gotten the best of her. I think Byron is one of the more conservative chefs in the competition. That was rewarded here. So he moved on.
You know, for someone who said his biggest problem is editing, I thought he did an amazing job editing.
Oh, yeah.
On this one. And that really saved the day for him, is just having something that was clean, focused. And I know that Sarah might be more inventive with her dishes, but when I saw that quail egg dish with the uni paste on top or uni sauce.
Those are things you and I love. But like in contrast, like his umeboshi glaze on a tataki piece of salmon. Like that's what I want in a bento box. I'm imagining that's what Tom wants in a bento box, right? Like he got the challenge and in a way that she didn't. She put four things that were kind of remotely Japanesey in a box. He did a bento box.
Yeah. So I was stunned by this. This was a huge upset. I was sad to see Sarah go because I, in my head, from malarkey saying she's going to win the whole thing, I kind of just felt like she was going to waltz her way back into the competition. And Byron, he moves on and advances to the finale of Last Chance Kitchen, which was like a 30-minute episode. And Kevin, I got to say, a lot of curveballs, as they always do with the Last Chance Kitchen finale. But I got to hand it to Byron. He must have been so exhausted.
Oh, man.
After beating out Sarah and coming off the elimination. I mean, this is quite the bricks on his shoulders here.
The remaining chefs, the five of them, each come in. They put together a box of 10 items. And then Byron has to choose three of the five boxes that correspond to each one of the chefs. And then he's going to have a best of three cook-off. In other words, he will face chef one in their box, chef two in their box, chef three in their box. If he wins two of those three matchups, he will go back to the competition. If he doesn't, he does not go. So this is an interesting case. It's not, it's, I don't know that we've had, have we had this where either you go or you don't go before? I think maybe, but this was interesting. So, you know, he goes with Gabe.
Didn't like it.
I didn't love it either. Though I do want it to be hard for chefs to get back in general. And we've had that philosophical conversation many times.
What I didn't like is what you presented in the last episode, last podcast we did, where you said, like, as someone who's worked with TV shows before, the fact that if there's a best of three, and the chef wins or loses the first one, you kind of know that he's going to win the second one. And so that's one of the, you know, nitpicking here, but when he loses the first round against Gabe and there was still a bunch of time left in the episode, you kind of know what's going to happen here. Is he's going to advance because he wins the next one and then there's the ultimate showdown? And like, look, I know that they gotta fill time and there's nothing they can really do about that, but I did kind of feel like if you're watching the clock a little bit, you can kind of reverse engineer how this episode is going to go.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I mean, the next time we see a best of three that goes 2-0 will be the first in any form, right? Like there's almost a guarantee. It's like they had to count backwards last time to get that, but they did it, right? Ultimately, he loses to Gabe and in the first box. Maria, kind of a very, you know, Mexican focused, they both do beautiful steak dishes. With sort of a, you know, with salsas and then ultimately it comes down to Jamie. And so Jamie is what stands between Byron's return to the competition as, again, just basically reversing the previous week in the sense that rather than being the sixth drop, he goes right back in, or the five remaining chefs moving on as initially planned. And so it's a really nip and tuck competition against Jamie.
Yeah, and Jamie just brings down the hammer, talking smack. You can't handle the truth.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
She's so much fun to watch. And like, it did feel like when all the different elements with the noodles, that Byron was working at a little bit of disadvantage there. And it turns out that the noodles were too gummy. They looked almost identical, the two dishes, the pork dishes that they presented. And they were both really spicy. You know, Byron tried to lower the heat a little bit on the dial, but actually it seemed like Jamie's was maybe almost too hot for Kristen. And she ends up actually validating herself. And I was like thinking to myself, they're not going to just have Byron go through all of this and then have him lose. Like,
see, that was my thought too. I have kind of respect for them.
But like LeBron and Cleveland, like when he said he was going down to Miami, they're not going to do a whole TV show for LeBron to say F you to Cleveland and move on. Like they're not going to do that. And sure enough, like that's exactly what happened.
Look, there were two technical components on that dish. Can you nail the protein? Can you nail the noodle? Right. Those are things where the variance is great. Like well-cooked pork is wonderful. Dry pork is dry. Noodles, same thing. Either the noodles are lovely or they're gummy or they're undercooked or overcooked. And at the end of the day, he lost the pork competition. He lost the noodle competition, even though Jamie probably dialed up the spice a little too much. His was much more in the preferred range of the judges. But that's it, Tom. And as a result, after all that, their Last Chance Kitchen produced no returnee. It's as if it, well, actually that's not true because Jamie is the, but it's funny. The returnee ended up happening very early in the season, rather than happening traditionally where it's happened, which is, you know, they just grind through seven or eight different competitions until they come out on top. I don't know that I love that. I don't love the early returnee as much as I love Jamie and watching her cook and think she's a great contestant here. I think in future seasons, at least my personal preference would be, I like it all. Like, I love Last Chance Kitchen, but you got to ride it out. You can't just kind of pop back in. If you're going to have one person return, they should return right at the end. It should truly be a loser's bracket that tests endurance, resourcefulness, and all the rest of it. You show that you can cook great food for multiple weeks before you know, get reversed, have your loss reversed.
Yeah, I think there was a certain cosmic balance to the fact that Jamie was the one to knock out Byron, as you said, because she got back into the competition. And she kind of like danced on his grave a little bit in ways that raised my eyebrows a little bit. And Byron goes home and Jamie's back in the she keeps it to five chefs. And I honestly think, Kevin, with the exception of Sarah, I'm really pleased with this final five. Here on Top Chef.
Very much so. Very much so. I really like it. Closing thoughts as we head into the final five, Tom.
I feel like I need to like do a palate cleanser after that one. I feel like I was maybe a little unfair. Is that how harsh I was?
I think you were terribly unfair. To what was a beautiful tournament of competition in a gorgeous setting. A food neither of us gravitates to, but probably should. In fact, I have a little, you know, I'm kind of tofu curious this week. I might head to Matsuwa and get some tofu of my own and play around.
One thought here, I did have this written down and I want to get your opinion. I kind of love when they have to do that like saran wrap spinning of that, whatever the table, the thing that they, the cart that they kind of like do the saran wrap spin. Isn't that like a real skill, like an event? They should do an event of like the saran wrap spin. It is always like a delightful little part of the show.
Right. Like the kind of the non-cooking sort of strangely like ergonomically weird tasks that you have to do in a kitchen that like aren't even food related. They should do sometime. Yeah, that would be cool. Like standing on top of a stepladder because you put the freaking roasting pan way the hell up and now you have to do it and there's no one home to help you and kind of thing. Like those things that actually happen all the time but we never actually see on the show.
Yeah, I feel like there's a real skill, like an athleticism to doing that saran wrap spin. And I just always love watching them do that. So, Kevin, here we go. The Last Chance Kitchen is done. And we have a final grouping of Shota, Don, Gabe, Jamie, and Maria. So final standings here as we go into the final here. We have Shota with 59 overall points, and then Gabe with 51, and Don with 49. And then coming up behind that, you have Jamie with 29 points and Maria with 26. So do you feel like those point allocations are fairly representative of their strength going into this last stretch?
I think it is. Although, you know, I would have Dawn right up there with Shota and Gabe, maybe even a little over Gabe. There's one chef in this competition who's not cooked a bad plate yet, and that chef is Dawn. We shall see. It none of it matters. Throw out the stats. Throw out the regular season, Tom. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm going to say my underdog here, I think Jamie might surprise us here at the end. I just think that she's got a lot of unfulfilled potential here that she's going to come through. So we'll see. I thought this was a little bit of a clunker of an episode. Maybe it was just a lot of Last Chance Kitchen tournament style and going on. But I am so excited about what's next.
For Tom Haberstroh, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives. We'll